Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning. It's Sunday morning wake-up Charlottesville. It is not Rick Moore. It is Sean McCord subbing in on the Sunday morning wake-up call with our very special guest, Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. Mike, let's do a mic check.
I'm here. Hopefully you can hear me.
All right. Mic checks. thank you very much for coming on to the wake-up call.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
This is really big of you and big for us. And when I told people that you were going to be our guest this morning, the number one question I got was, who's Mike Signer? So that's a little unfair, but we're having fun here. Mike Signer is the new mayor of Charlottesville. We have not an elected mayor, but a selected mayor. So you ran for city council, one got on city council.
Right.
And then your fellow councilors chose you as mayor. I want to get a little bit into that process and how it works. But first of all, let's talk about you. You have a BA in politics from Princeton, a JD from UVA Law School, PhD in political science from UC Berkeley. You have worked as a legislative aide to Delegate Creed Deeds, to counsel to Governor Mark Warner, a strategist to Congressman Tom Perriello. And then in 2009, you ran in the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor for Commonwealth of Virginia. You came in second. And you are a local attorney. You're founder of the Madison Law Strategy Group, which specializes in corporate and regulatory law. And you've also been a voting rights attorney. You're a UVA lecturer and author. Mm-hmm. I remember when you ran for lieutenant governor in 2009, you were also doing a book tour.
Right.
You're basically
right.
Plugging your book and plugging yourself at the
same
time.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And you got it. And then you published.
Strange timing.
Yeah, it was. And then you have a second book on
James Madison.
James Madison, another local stalwart. Yeah. So you've done a few things. And when you campaigned for the city council, you campaigned on One Charlottesville, was your campaign slogan.
Right.
Unlike your, when you ran for lieutenant governor, I think your campaign slogan was, who's Mike Signer?
I don't know. No, the campaign slogan then was making that office a public advocate, because it's too frequently kind of a stepping stone or a
right.
placeholder, and I was really inspired. I had helped Tom Perriello win in 2008 for his congressional campaign, and he came in with no elective experience and so much youth and energy and optimism and this kind of boundless approach to what you could do. And then I just was very kind of infected by what he had done and what he was going to do in Congress. And then I had started to study a little bit about that office. And Don Beyer, there was a series of people who had come into the office as kind of non-professional politicians. And there was an opportunity to kind of channel. I've been an activist ever since high school. I've taken on just a series of causes that have been close to my heart and tried to throw myself into improving institutions or policy as an activist. So that's kind of my bent in public life. And I thought there was a real opportunity to sort of bring that approach to that office. Didn't quite work out, but it was an amazing experience traveling all around the state.
Yeah, but now you've gone on to greater things.
We'll see. I hope so.
Now you are the mayor of Charlottesville, a world-class city.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about you and about your background. We will open up the phones in the latter half of the show for calls. And for our listeners, I promise you, we will talk about the Landmark Hotel.
I'd love to talk about the Landmark Hotel.
I'm sure you would. You have been talking about the Landmark Hotel. But let's talk a little bit about your goals as mayor. But actually, let's roll back a minute. Let's talk about, how is the mayor selected? How does that process work?
So in Charlottesville, the five city councilors select the mayor every 2 years. And there is a official kind of process I don't think it's an ordinance, but it's official. And you basically, in the meeting, you take a nomination, and that is the one meeting that the city manager runs, and he runs it for about 5 minutes because there's no acting mayor. There's no mayor at that point, and that's what happened in the first meeting. And
it's kind of like the vice president running the Senate.
Yeah, and you take a nomination, and if there's a nomination and there's a second of that, and there were no other nominations, then the city manager asks, "Is there any discussion?" And if there's no discussion, then the vote happens right away, and that's how it's happened every time in the past. And so that. There was obviously a lot of discussion that we all had beforehand, one-on-one mostly, and I didn't really know exactly how it was going to turn out. I was very happy and flattered to get that there was a unanimous vote. It was very exciting, and it's a great... I'm very interested in and dedicated to leadership. I teach a leadership class at UVA called Leadership, Statesmanship, and Democracy. I think there's a real opportunity in this particular city council for leadership, and I was really just flattered that and excited to work with these four other people. The first meeting was just very exciting to start off that way and start, you know, but it's still getting used to a new set of clothes. People are saying Mr. Mayor, I'm turning around and looking around to who they're talking to, and so my wife lets me, my head is not going to get too big because I have a wonderful wife and two 15-month-old boys at home, so there's no way that I'm gonna get too inflated because
you're not gonna come here with cheese with a huge head.
No.
So should I call you Your Honor? Should I call you Mr. Mayor? Should I call you?
You can call me Mike.
I'll call you Mike. Excellent. Good, because that's what I have been doing. And just to clarify, I mean, this is brand new. You've been mayor for what, 2 weeks?
Not even that.
Not even that. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
On Monday. So what have you done for us lately?
Well, I've only been mayor, obviously, for 2 weeks. So you have city council meetings every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. We have, we are working on the budget right now for 2017. So that is in the process. That will be finalized this spring. So there's a tremendous amount of prep work and meetings that are going on right now for those big decisions. And that is highly significant. How we're going to fund the schools, how we're going to fund public housing, how we're going to fund our infrastructure projects, which are how we're going to start on those. We have, the major priorities that I talked about in my campaign were economic development and creating local jobs is really important to me. Public safety, making sure that we're doing relational policing, working with the police and the fire department as well as we can. I talked a lot about the environment here, the natural environment, and there's a set of other things like that. But then when you get into government, there's also look at the line of things that we have that the city has invested in planning on, but that we are unsure what we're going to do about. That goes from expanding pre-K and reconfiguring the schools. That's been a long discussion. The city's done a lot of planning on the Belmont Bridge. Mm-hmm. This is going to happen this year, and the city is going to have to pony up some funds for the enhanced bridge concept. And that is the city council leadership issue. And I think that's really important. The strategic investment area, what that is going to be from the city's perspective, what are we funding and what are we doing in that huge area that's right next to the downtown mall? I was just at this absolutely inspiring, it was my first official speech as mayor yesterday morning, was the dedication of 6 new homes that Habitat for Humanity has built there. And it was just absolutely an amazing experience. There were a very large crowd. These 6 families have all done sweat equity building these homes. This is in Burnett Commons right off of Monticello Road,
right,
which is in the heart of Charlottesville, and it's previously an area that was a landfill. This shows the potential for redeveloping that large area of land and really doing magical things with it. You had a nonprofit and a for-profit come together because Southern Development is working with Habitat. You had a lot of these are International Rescue Committee families, so they've come here as political refugees. I talked to this the Bay family who came from Liberia, and they had been in a refugee camp for 7 years, and now have this. The remarks that the people made about Charlottesville being this welcoming city were so inspiring, and tears were in people's eyes. It was just this incredible blessing to see all this. You had them giving out Korans and Bibles to the families there. So you had this inclusiveness and diversity and pluralism, which is part of what makes us a world-class city. And it just wrapped into this one experience all these amazing things that are happening in downtown Charlottesville. And it was really, so that, I talked about one Charlottesville in my campaign. That's the theme. That's what I want. That's what I talked about in the first city council meeting in my first remarks. That to me is about focusing on the common good of the entire city. It's about building bridges between our different neighborhoods and our different communities. It's about finding what unites us rather than divides us. And that was like, proof positive of this idea, what I just saw yesterday and what I was just privileged to speak about as in my first speech.
My guest who made his first speech as mayor yesterday is His Honor, Mike Signer, who...
I still laugh at that. I'll probably laugh at that the whole time.
Oh, sure. Why not? This is your first week on city council, and at your first meeting, you were selected as mayor. Your next city council meeting is going to be next week. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday morning wake-up call. So let's talk about One Charlottesville. From your website, increase economic opportunity in the city, increasing quality of life, neighborhoods and natural environment, improve public safety policies, and stand by our public schools, which is our biggest budgetary commitment.
Right.
How does the city council work? What can the city council do? I know you said policies for the city, but we are a city that's managed by a city manager's office. The mayor, city council, those are all part-time jobs.
So Virginia has 135 localities, I think, and every one of them, except for Richmond, has this form of government, which is a strong city manager form of government that came out of the progressive era where you wanted to professionalize the staff. So we are run by a day-to-day city manager. A lot of people, the city council, I get paid $16,000 a year presently for this job. So it's set up to be a citizen legislator job.
That's not even minimum wage.
I don't think it certainly wasn't last week. I probably did 30 or 40 hours a week last week on meetings and city council business. So I have a law practice, which is how I'm supporting my family. But what we do is you do two things. You set policy for the city and you fund the city. Mm-hmm. So the city manager works for the city council as they do in every other locality in Virginia. We are the city manager's boss. His name is Maurice Jones. He's a terrific guy. He's pouring a lot of passion and hard work into the city. So the way that I see city council.
By the way, Maurice, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the wake up call sometime. Go on, Mike.
So the way that I see the city council is we set the policy agenda for the city. So that means that if the office of, the Economic Development Office, if it is considering a range of different programs to fund, their direction is going to come from city council working with the manager. So for instance, there's a program called Growing Opportunity, where the Economic Development Office sets up apprenticeship programs with local employers that are going to lead to known jobs for underprivileged population here in Charlottesville. So that was the program that came out of a city council directive and the Economic Development Office coming up with a plan internally. That is a good example of how you can set policy funding and then get a program done. It's created, I think, over 100 jobs right now with things like bus drivers. There's a Marriott Go Growing Opportunity program that's happening right now to work with the Marriott. So there are lots and lots and lots of examples like that. So if council can come up with a clear vision on particular areas, then we can get the city doing those things. And that's how I see my job.
So let's talk about some of the controversies involving city council.
Did you want to do a little bit about my background also?
Let's talk a bit more about your background. Well, you're the guest. You tell us what you'd like to talk about.
I saw that on my outline. Well, to just talk about where I come from and so on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I listed your academic credits, your Princeton University, UVA School of Law, Berkeley.
Well, I grew up in Arlington County. I went to public schools, majority-minority public schools, which was a really important part of growing up for me was having the experience of being, whites were, I think, 30% in both my elementary school and my high school. My parents are journalists, so I was raised kind of by people really looking to find the truth in matters, looking at the importance of stories. I really care about the quality of journalism today as a result of that. We had really profound economic stress in our life because my father was out of work through an illness basically from when I was ninth grade through the present day until he retired and went on Social Security. So we had one income coming from my mom and just a ton of stress and anxiety about money, so it's one of the reasons that I really empathize with the condition of a lot of people in our economy. Mm-hmm. In Charlottesville is a very high poverty rate, as everybody knows. Our schools, 53% are free and reduced lunch in our schools. So you have a majority population in public schools that are experiencing economic stress. So it's something that I really care about in our country, in our city. I have an amazing wife named Emily Blout, who's finishing her PhD right now, but she's also teaching at UVA, and we have two 15-month-old boys. And a lot of the activities I do are very intensively local. So I'm the chairman of the Emergency Food Network, which used to be the food bank, which has been around for 40 years and provides 3 days of emergency food to people thousands of times a year in Charlottesville and Albemarle. I'm the president of the Fifeville Neighborhood Association, so I have the experience of being a neighborhood activist. And we got the Neighborhood of the Year award from the Planning Commission last year in recognition of how active we've been on a lot of planning and public safety issues. And there's a whole bunch of it. I did the Citizens Police Academy, mm-hmm. Which was incredibly educational and so helpful to me in this job. That's just some of the background that I was bringing to the, you know, personally. You said people didn't know who I was, so I thought they might want to know some of those details.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been involved, in local politics for a few years.
Oh yeah,
here now. I first met you when you were running for lieutenant governor.
Uh huh.
And I'm very glad personally to see that you've now gotten involved again locally, and
thank you.
And now in such a prominent position, and I think the fact that you were unanimously selected by the rest of the council shows that. I think people are always a little surprised by how that process works. I grew up in a town where the mayor was elected.
Mm.
And
where was that?
Oh, in California, in the
uh-huh,
West Coast.
Uh-huh.
I know there was some surprise.
It happens every 2 years. There shouldn't be that almost in exactly that same way. So there shouldn't be that much surprise. This has happened for probably 50 years in the exact same way.
It's not always that someone who was just elected council.
Well, that's happened 3 times in the past that I know of.
Yeah.
So David Brown, Betsy mm-hmm. Waters, and Nancy O'Brien were elected in their first time. And I thought that really showed. And then in the county, it just happened with Jane Dittmar last time. So she was first time member of the Board of Supervisors, and she became the chairman. So I think that what that showed was the interest among these five people, myself included, for kind of a fresh set of eyes on problems. And the experience that I bring as a fresh set of eyes was a ton of leadership experience and being an attorney to a governor. There was a nice thing about having an attorney on the board on the council for the first time since David Toscano, that kind of analytic sense, and a lot of experience being collegial and listening and trying to bring people together. So I think was in everyone's minds when they made the ultimate decision to press, you know, the green button for me. So it was really, you know, so that's what I think is going on.
So when you ran for lieutenant governor, that was the first time you ran for elected office.
Yeah.
Nothing like swinging for the fences.
Yeah, well, and Tom Perriello had just done it. I mean, he hadn't run for anything and was going to do so much good in Congress. And it was just such a gutsy, amazing, you know, public service is so difficult and so important. And I think there's so much cynicism. I talked a lot about cynicism in my opening remarks on the first city council meeting. And part of what I see this, you know, people are, it's kind of a self-fulfilling downward prophecy, this cynicism that people have about government, about public service, about anybody in politics. And you know, anytime that I see somebody kind of pierce that, and it can be very audacious, and it can be, you know, and Tom just plunged right into a congressional race because he saw a lot that needed doing in Congress, and he had never held anything before, and he was amazing, and he's still one of my closest friends. And so, I don't make any apologies at all for plunging into anybody I know. It credeats, and I've talked about it for years. Anybody I know who has the fire in the belly to want to do anything in politics or public service or elected office, I think they should do it. And it just happens that I just think they should do it.
My guest with the fire in his belly is His Honor Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
It is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. This is Sean McCord with my guest, Mike Signer. I'll stop calling you His Honor. I'm just enjoying I just have the wince, way you wince every time I say it.
Getting used to it.
Yeah. I used to tease Dave Norris that when he was no longer mayor of Charlottesville, he would still always be the honorary mayor of Bodo's.
Right. Because he always had his meeting in Bodo's.
Basically where his office was, it was in Bodo's Bagels. Yeah. So, but this is Mike Signer. He is the mayor of Charlottesville as of 2 weeks ago tomorrow. And we're talking about the city council. And thank you for a bit of your background and what you bring to the council and why you were a good choice for the council to select as mayor. Have you spent the past year or so going to city council meetings, watching how they work as you considered the run? And do you have some ideas about how maybe we can do things a little differently?
Well, not just the past year. I mean, people may know, one of the reasons that I think this kind of germinated was I was the chair in 2013 of the Democratic City Council campaign.
Right.
Bob Fenwick and Kristen Sakos were the nominees that we had. And so I got deeply involved in how city council worked and what the needs were, what Democrats could do, a lot of the policy issues. So that when Mayor Hooja said that he was stepping down, that was it was pretty natural that a lot of people suggested to me that I might run. And yeah, I've spent a ton of time thinking about city council. I think the kind of major thing I talked about during the campaign and I'm trying to do now is what, so in my remarks on the first meeting, I talked about respect and action. Those are the two values that are really important to me in looking at this body. I think we need, there was a pretty fractious period the last 4 years on city council.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in bringing a level of respect, and I talked in very strong terms about how I'm going to use the authority I have as mayor to ensure and enforce respect from us to each other, from us to staff, from among us when we listen to citizens speaking. And I think that's important because the kind of ultimate goal I have, this is not at the specific issue level. This is sort of how council governs in the city. When I talked about the danger of cynicism, I think Charlottesville City Council should be something that school children watch and they say, you know what, I think I want to be on city council someday. It should be modeling governance, and it should see itself as a model for the city of how we're working together to solve our problems and figure out what we're going to do with the government. And I'm very interested in that. I've seen so much inspiring evidence of this in my 2 weeks as mayor. I was in a 2-hour meeting last week about ways that we could possibly expand pre-K. The 8 or 9 people who were there all were volunteering their time. They all care so much about what to do with government, about how to help people. There are so many people in this community. You see it in this amazing nonprofit sector we have. So many people are working so hard to try and help people and trying to figure out answers to our problems. And there's such an amazing amount of evidence, not for cynicism, but for hope about what government can do. And I'm really interested in our city council being the mirror of that hope that I see and figuring out our problems. So that's what I'm going to, try to do every day.
Hopeful man sitting across from me is Mike Signer. Newly selected mayor of Charlottesville. You talked about how fractious these past 4 years have been, and we'll open up the phone in a few minutes. But one of the criticisms I hear from people living in this town is that we are a Democratic city, and we haven't had a Republican on the city council in years. How do, you know, basically in this town, once you win the Democratic nomination, in all likelihood, you're going to be on the city council. So how do you, as a city council member, let alone mayor, make sure
really
that
good,
we are representing everybody?
It's a really good
city.
Question. So one of the one of the reasons that I talked about one Charlottesville as my goal was I think that the I don't think Republicans and independents or conservatives should feel locked out of this city. I think they should feel just as much a part of Charlottesville and just as listened to and respected as anybody. And I feel very committed to that. I think part of the experience I'm bringing this position is I am in the private sector. I've been running a law firm for 5 years. I work with startups here in town. I'm outside general counsel. That's what I do for a living. I work with, you know, so to the extent that people are very, you know, the stereotype, I guess, is that Republicans and conservatives are, you know, oftentimes very committed to the free market and to business, the business sector. And a lot of the critique I've heard certainly from those, you know, some of those people during my campaign was they didn't feel like city council was speaking to them or any of those issues. I'm very interested in the business community here, but I'm also just very interested in talking to everybody. There was an interesting moment that happened. I mean, look at, you know, the experience of being mayor is going to, I was telling somebody, I ran into somebody when I was shopping at Food Lion at 10 o'clock, you know, the second day after my first meeting. And they said, oh, here's the mayor. And I said, this is my life. I mean, this is not, you know, it's not so much the people's mayor, it's just the guy who happens to be mayor is shopping at Food Lion at 10 o'clock at night for his family, because that's the only time that we can do it. The same thing happened yesterday when I was buying a 90 pack of diapers at the CVS in the downtown mall, and somebody took a picture of me, and I was like, there's nothing special about this. This is what I have to do all the time, right? Because we have twin boys.
Instagram hashtag Mayor Seville diaper shopping.
Right, exactly.
So we talked a little bit about before the show and about the fact that the city manager, that we are a strong city manager town. I'm talking to Mike Signer, the mayor of Charlottesville. What can, and the city manager works for you, so what can the city council do? What not only what does the city council do, but what can the city council do? You can drive policy. You can, you know, the budgets go through you. So you can approve the budget for the police department, but you can't really specify how the police department spends that budget. Mm-hmm. You can, I know the school budget goes through you as well, and then you get requests from the school board, and then they come to the city council. So how much can the city council influence what happens in this town?
A lot. And it is in part through the relationship that we have with the city manager. I already in my 2 weeks have spent a ton of time meeting with Mr. Jones, city manager, at his request and in our agreement. It helps everything when the elected officials of the city have a very tight, strong, and positive relationship with the city manager, because we are the analogy is to in a corporation. You have a board of directors and you have a CEO. The board of directors sets policy for the city. They have regular meetings for the corporation, and the CEO executes the policy. The CEO works for the board. So that is how Virginia cities and counties are set up, and that is how I see this position. The mayor has the express authority to run the meetings. So we have meetings every 2 weeks. There's also work sessions. There's meetings with a lot of boards. We just had a joint city council and school board meeting on Friday for 2 hours. And that was a really good example of how city council is involved in budgetary priorities, because we asked a lot of questions. We had a dialogue about their priorities. They're asking for more money in this budget. We are going to have to consider that request along with the ones that we get from everybody else. There's a lot of dynamic negotiation that's happening between the city council and the bodies that want money from us to do what they do for the city. And that's a huge part of the work that we do. That is kind of setting aside the new priorities we bring to city council. So that's that list that I was, you know, getting to. So, for instance, the Landmark Hotel. I mean, that was a priority for me all through last year. I urgently think the city and city council, working with the city manager, has a very strong role in bringing this disaster to a conclusion, to a resolution. So I see the Landmark Hotel. My law office is half a block away. I live three blocks away. I hear about people's frustration from all walks of life, all ethnicities, all amounts of money, all everything. Charlottesville, on a weekly basis, frustrations about how much that is impeding our quality of life down there. And then, so the city can direct, we have the city attorney, we have a whole, we have a staff of lawyers, we have the city manager's office, we have a lot of assets to negotiate and push through and achieve a resolution of that. That means either, and this was where I was before what happened last week, where debris blew off the building and could have killed somebody.
Right, so the Landmark Hotel was back in the news last week because the fire department had to cordon off the block.
Yeah, and I was on site that whole time. Yeah. And I was on the phone with the city manager, with our attorney. I was helping coordinate and direct what the response was going to be. So we ultimately, the city sent in the fire department that night because we determined when you walked up to it, there was... Because the building's been left in such profound disrepair, there was a very tall metal door frame that was swinging out. One of its hinges had broken off, and it was swinging out over the building. That was on top of what had happened the night before, where a beam had gone through the roof of the CVS right next door, the CVS building next door, and could have killed somebody if it hadn't been stopped by the ceiling. So this is a public safety threat, and we made the determination that the police had, the fire department had to go in that night because it was so dangerous. But there's all kinds of other stuff in there. This building, so I continue it an active and ongoing public safety threat. That is a very important legal fact to what we were already going to do, which is to use the city's assets to make this developer, either he develops it, somebody else develops it in a hotel. There's four paths that I see off of this. Dewberry, who's the current owner, develops it into the hotel that he was planning, which would make the most sense because it was built to be a boutique hotel. The second thing is that somebody else develops it into a hotel.
Yep.
The third thing is that it gets developed by somebody else into another kind of use, nonprofit, office, incubator. The fourth thing is that it has to come down.
Yep.
Those are the four possibilities. So that we are going to determine which of those happens this year. People get frustrated and they, you know, it's I really want to avoid simplistic. I don't want to pander to people, and I don't want to give simplistic answers to things. That's what I spoke about in the first meeting too last week. I talked about the danger of just symbolic politics. Symbolic. A lot of the time in our politics today, I feel like we're just public officials are pandering to people by giving them a symbolic victory, and I'm really not interested in doing that. I want it to be about what we're doing. And in this case, the absolute cheapest, most expedient thing is for the current owner to finish the damn hotel. That is what, and the city can, if we can force that to happen using the carrots and sticks that we have as a municipality, then that is the quickest thing. If he's not going to do that, and we, you know, I just became mayor less than 2 weeks ago, we have a legal briefing that I had already ordered before the city council's meeting in closed session because it's legal on Tuesday night. I had already set that in motion last, that was like the first thing that I did as mayor.
Right.
So we are going to know our options very quickly here. That allows us to go to him and figure out what their plans are. There's been very little dialogue with them, but we're going to make it happen, and I'm committed to that.
Talking about carrots and sticks is Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. If you have questions for his honor, the phone number here is 284-9470. And I appreciate what you said about not pandering to people, but I have to ask, what is our stick in this case?
Oh, I mean, our stick would be condemning the building.
Yeah.
Because
so,
under the
so,
Virginia Code...
So that
code,
is not off the table.
Yeah, not at all. Under the Virginia Code, if you cannot condemn a property for economic use. There was a Supreme Court case called Kelo, which came down a few years ago, where the Supreme Court allowed a city to condemn a property for basically economic development purposes. And then a bunch of very conservative states or with conservative legislatures passed constitutional amendments saying that you couldn't do that. Virginia was one of those under Ken Cuccinelli, kind of helped lead that charge. So, but we could condemn it because it's a public safety threat, and it is.
Right.
We see that, and we already knew that. It was just kind of, this is proof positive that we have a clear authority to condemn it. We also can fine the owner. We can, there's lots of other things we could do based on the condition and the threat of the building. We haven't, the last the kind of regime we're operating under was a memorandum from 2 years ago, which is when he put up the plywood and the lights and so on. That is not sufficient to make that building even remotely okay in its current from the city's perspective. So I think we have a lot of sticks at our disposal, and that's kind of this is coming.
Good. Now, the timing happened to work out. I remember you held a press conference sort of at the base of the hotel after the election.
Yep.
before even the first city council meeting.
No, this was in the last Kathy Galvin and Wes Bellamy, my teammates. Mm-hmm. On our ticket were there with me, and this was, I think it was last September or October. We did a press conference about, basically, which is the plan I'm talking about getting this resolved within the year was the goal.
Right. And so the event of this weekend have brought it to the fore.
Yeah. But it was already at the fore.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't want other issues that you're concerned about to get buried, in the debris falling from the Landmark Hotel.
Yeah.
So what else is on your list of you think are the top most important issues that need to be addressed here in town?
Well, I continue the major issue of my campaign and the one that is creating economic opportunity. I'm really interested in that. We have a very high poverty level in the city through a number of different factors. You also have national trends which are hard for a city to address, particularly in a we have Dillon's rule in Virginia, which is a rule which makes it hard for cities to do a lot of stuff on their own unless the General Assembly gives them permission. But we can try and negotiate better deals with employers coming into town, mm-hmm. to create more jobs for the people, especially the folks in our city who don't have college degrees. So I'm very interested in what our Economic Development Office can do here. I'm very interested in what we can do negotiating with employers in the city. We just have a series of these projects that have been stalled for a while. The West Main streetscape plan. I was on this committee for 2 years. I was just at a meeting last week. I think we have a real opportunity to take the best ideas from the community and get this project has been pending for 40 years.
Just talk a little bit about it, because not everybody's familiar with
it. So West Main Street is the corridor that connects the grounds at UVA and the downtown mall.
Mm-hmm.
It's an aging street where a lot of the sidewalks are in pretty... I live right off of it, so
right.
I see this every day. This is my... and I walk along West Main when I teach at UVA. I walk along it when I go to my law office in the downtown mall. So the consensus among staff and many previous councils has been we should develop and improve West Main so that it's a destination and an attraction, so that for the next 50 or 100 years when we're all gone, that is an attraction and a feature of Charlottesville, like the corner and like the downtown mall and like Court Square and like other areas of the city. It's not that right now. It has kind of the trees aren't in such great shape. The sidewalks are pushing up. They have to be pushed down.
Yeah, it's scattershot. I mean, there are some sections which are
and
nice.
One of the worst things is the biking. We've sort of been increasingly making a move toward what's called multimodal streets, where you have mass transit and pedestrians and cars and bikes are comfortable on them. You have bike lanes on West Main, which happened a number of years ago, but they're not safe. They're far below the standards of bike lanes with the amount of traffic that's there. And I have a lot of friends who have, my campaign manager got into an awful accident going onto 4th Street. And it's just not, people don't feel safe. And I've heard that from UVA students a lot. They won't bike down West Main because it's so crowded and you just don't have enough space on the bike lanes to be, to prevent being doored. So we have an opportunity to fix a lot of problems at once, to make it more beautiful, to make it more functional, to make the sidewalks wider, to make the trees better. And that's the goal. And I think it's I'm hopeful that we can finally get moving on some parts of this. And it'll be exciting for the city.
Hold that thought. This is Mike Signer, the mayor of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
This is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is Sean McCord hosting. My guest is Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. If you have questions for Mike, can call us at 284-9470. We're live for another 20 minutes. So you talked about Westman. You mentioned the Belmont Bridge. That's another ongoing project. Where are we with that?
We have just issued an RFP, a request for proposals, to the design community. We're going to be getting those back in the next weeks, and then there will be a series of, I think, 20 public hearings that are required that will go into the ultimate design. City Council. So if people know, the Belmont Bridge right now, half of it you can't use. It's in such disrepair that you can't walk on half of it, which I think is embarrassing to the city at an entry point to the city.
And I remember people were running for council 2 years ago,
right,
with proposals to help fix the bridge.
Yeah, and there was a really bad thing that happened where the design company that we had a couple of years ago went bankrupt, and so the city unfortunately lost some money in that. So, you know, God willing, nothing remotely like that could happen this time. So the idea is to move. We have state funding for the majority of building that bridge, for getting it done. We also have, the city is going to have to supplement that funding for what's called an enhanced bridge concept, where you have more usefulness for people walking, for people biking. There's mm-hmm. a debate that's happening right now about whether the bridge should only be one lane both ways or two lanes. And I'm pretty committed to the developer, the design firm, giving us options for what it would look like to have two lanes both ways. That would cut into the room that there would be for bikers and walkers, but it might make sense given the upcoming traffic needs of the city. So it's something we're talking about, but we're going to get a bridge built there, and it'll happen. It'll start during this mayorship.
So there are three major entities in the area. There's the city. There's the council,
the university, the city, the county,
and the university.
Yep.
How do all those work together? How are the relationships between the three now? And what do you see that we can do?
They should be a lot stronger. And it's one of the things that I'm excited about as mayor is I get to be on what's called the PAC, which is the acronym. It's so early on Sunday morning, I'm not going to be able to come up with exactly what it stands for. But it's basically a committee that is made up of the mayor of Charlottesville, the chair of the board of supervisors in Albemarle County, and the president of the university or their designees. So I think that committee ought to be more robust than it is, and it ought to be more one-on-one between really senior officials in the city. So city manager, county manager, provost of the university. We ought to be having... There's a lot of opportunity that we have. For instance, I'll give you an example. I talked to President Sullivan at an event at her. I was watching one of the football games from the box there as a neighborhood association president, and we just chatted. And I said, I think one of the major issues that the university ought to figure out with the city is there. I think there's going to be like a 40% or 50% turnover in their faculty over the next 10 years. That's what's predicted.
That's what I hear, yeah.
I would like for there to be a strategy in place where the university and the city work together to get as many of those people living in the city of Charlottesville as possible. I think that professors and their families could bring dollars into the city. They could bring cultural and intellectual dynamism. They could bring a lot more kids. They could bring a greater sense of responsibility in the university for what's happening in the city. I think that would be really healthy. There's a lot longer conversations we need. And, you know, if the University of Virginia, so many people in Charlottesville work at UVA and are underpaid because UVA is a monopoly employer. And there are a lot of people in Fifield who have, you know, like a technician job or lab tech, and they get paid very little. And that, you know, we have a lot of wage problems in this country with big employers. I would like to do everything we can to get UVA to be more generous, corporations.
Do you support the living wage campaign?
In principle, I do. Yeah.
Well, you talked about this is a good point to talk about this. You talked about this in your campaign a few minutes ago. About economic opportunity here in town. And that is, I mean, living wage is a big part of it, but it's housing, it's job growth, it's childcare, mm-hmm. it's transportation. Yep. These are big issues.
Yep.
And again, I ask, what can the city council and what can you as mayor do to advance some of those topics?
Well, on all those things, the city is already doing quite a lot. So there's part of this, part of another thing that I want to do as mayor is kind of tell the good news about the city. We were in a, and this doesn't mean by any means that there is vast amounts to do on all the topics you just raised. But the city, for instance, I was in a meeting on Friday. We currently rank among Virginia's 38 cities. We are number one on health and welfare spending. We spend 250% the median expenditure of Virginia's 38 cities on health and welfare programs.
And where's that money coming from? Is that city budget?
So right now that's coming from the city budget and city agencies. Where the money is coming from, I think the vast majority of it is probably, the answer to that question is going to be complicated because some of this is going through Region 10, some of it is going through social services. You know, we have a needful population, and we have a very sensitive and responsive and proactive government for our underprivileged. That doesn't mean there's not lots more that we can do, and there is lots more that we can do. What I just saw yesterday, when I made what I talked about earlier, the dedication of these new Habitat homes in the strategic investment area, that is the result of city activism, city government choosing to work with the developer and Habitat to drive this project forward. And it's really exciting. It's created, you know, these are for low-income people, homes that they own that are right in the city center. There's so much more to do that we're all going to be trying to do while we balance priorities on things like childcare and public health. I mean, there's a lot of, look at the problems that there is with obesity or diabetes in our community. But we're bringing there's a new clinic coming to the X Center, which is going to be right in the heart of the area. They came and they did a presentation in my neighborhood association in Fifeville, and luckily, and there was a lot of support that they found from within council and the community, and that clinic will do a lot of good, I think, there. So on all these things, it's kind of working to move the needle as we can.
The man who's moving the needle is Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. We're talking about doing what we can to address economic inequality here in town. Some criticism I have heard, and I'd like you to address this to see if you think it's a legitimate point, is that the more we do for people, for example, the Haven, we opened up the Haven to house homeless people, then that just attracts more homeless people. That if we build more housing, then we attract more people who need housing. I have heard anecdotally that there appear to be more people standing on the medians, in the streets with their signs asking for money in the downtown mall. So obviously we shouldn't have more opportunities for people, but what do we do?
It's a really good question. So I think it's important not to oversimplify some of these things. Within that problem that you just talked about, there were several different things that you talked about. There's the problem of people standing on the medians in most of the time county land, because there is a law that allows them to stand in medians. So they know that, and the cops can't stop them. Then there's the downtown mall. Then there's the Haven. The Haven actually has changed what it's doing quite a lot, because there is a movement in Charlottesville. And this is one of the things that City Manager Jones is most proud of, is in his legacy of moving homeless into long-term housing. This is why new ideas are so important. So the paradigm of just providing kind of as-you-go services to homeless individuals has been replaced in Charlottesville and nationally by the model of get them into homes, and that will, the homeless people need homes. So that's why the crossings was so important in moving a number of people into, but there's a whole movement, not just at the crossings, that the Haven is working with. I just talked to Elise, who helps run it, and Stephen Hitchcock, who does run it, over the last few months. And they see their mission as ending their mission. And they're having a lot of success in getting people out. Their population is dropping as they get more people into these negotiated leases with landlords around town, where hopefully they have transportation, and they're working very carefully in kind of a one-on-one approach to get people into housing. That's wonderful. That's great. That's good news. And it shows that these, so I hear that critique and that concern, but I don't think it actually speaks. I think that the organizations involved are doing their mightiest to actually resolve the work on, solve the problems. And I think that they should be credited with that.
another critique I hear of this town, and I've lived here 25 years, and I've had, you know, I've had a good life. I have a house. I have a family. I've had steady employment. But I've also been lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear from a lot of people that, especially because of the, you know, wages you get mm-hmm. at UVA, if you're, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a line worker, or if you work for facilities, or even mm-hmm. if you're just adjunct faculty,
mm-hmm.
That you may not make enough there to actually be able to afford a house here mm-hmm. in town. So we're addressing housing for people on who are economically underprivileged.
Mm-hmm.
But what can we do about the growing middle class of people who actually can afford to live right here in the city?
Well, workforce housing is what you're talking about.
Right.
So the city working with developers to set the incentives right and use the affordable housing fund, from what I understand, is hard to use for in a very direct way for workforce housing. But we can use zoning and we can use other tools, because workforce housing is people who aren't poor, but they're still stressed. So Charlottesville has a high percentage of people who are considered housing stressed. So they're spending more than a third of their income on housing, and that we have a higher percentage relative to a lot of other cities, and that's what you're speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to provide more housing that, you know, sometimes they're gonna be a little smaller. They'll be accessible, and they can be developed in blocks, and developers want to do that kind of housing, but they need the zoning rules set right, and they need the city to be channeling support and resources toward. So basically that means that as a member of city council, I will be very interested in supporting moves toward more workforce housing, especially in significant chunks.
You said developers want to develop more of that kind of housing.
Yeah. I mean,
want to build big houses that sell for $500,000?
They do, but they also want to, you know, a lot of they're members, the ones who live here are members of the community too. And they want to, it's not in their interest if Charlottesville becomes only a place where the rich live, you know, near that's not in their interest, because those people, don't create as dynamic of a culture, and they spend differently, and that's not the city any of us want, really. So no, I think this is a very active brainstorm and decision-making process that the government is involved in with the stakeholders and with the development community. It just so happens that cities, you know, very infrequently build housing themselves. So the people who do that are, you know, builders. So we have to work with them to make sure the more that kind of housing happens.
My guest is Mike Signer, the new mayor of Charlottesville. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Mike, talking about what the city council can and can't do, a couple of years ago in 2013, the city council passed an initiative that got us a lot of national attention, and we became known as the first anti-drone city. And really, all we were doing was urging the General Assembly to take a pause to prevent police agencies from using drones to collect information or outfit them with anti-personnel devices. But it got us a lot of a national attention. Other cities have followed suit. But there was also criticism that that's not really something the city council should be doing.
Yeah.
That this is a national issue or a state issue. So without relitigating that conversation, what do you see the place of the city council and the mayor?
Well, it's a good question. I spoke about that in general terms in my first address mm-hmm. in city council. I talked about how I wanted to focus on action and not symbolic politics or symbolic victories. I really am wanting to track our attention onto what our government is doing for people who need, and for the city. And this to me has to do with projects that touch people, or with, you know, it's not the sexiest thing in the world, but roads and police and bridges and a responsive government. That's a big thing, making sure that, that especially neighborhood development services is responsive. We're working on right now implementing a system in the city about complaint tracking. We don't track complaints. We don't. A lot of other cities do through what's called 311 systems. And we need to make sure that people, when they call the government for something, that they know, just if you call Verizon for a problem, you're going
right.
to, you know where that complaint went. You got to have the same feeling when you call the city. And so that's where my attention is going to be. That's what I have to say about that.
Well, still, there are issues in the zeitgeist right now that are national issues, but also affect people on a very local, personal level. I'm thinking, for example, last week of the president and his initiatives on gun safety.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically passed, you know, he passed the card. He says, here's what we could do on a federal level. Now, here's what I expect states to be able to do. And some mm-hmm. states are already responding. Are there things that we can do on a local level to address this issue? And do you think we should be?
I mean, the police should be enforcing our gun laws very aggressively, and the prosecutors should be prosecuting violations of gun laws very aggressively. That's within the city of Charlottesville's authority. I just want to be honest and direct with everybody about the form of government we have, and this is the danger I see in pandering or doing just symbolic stuff. The cities in Charlottesville have very limited powers on things because of what's called Dillon's rule. So we can right. only pass ordinances on matters that we have been allowed to by the General Assembly, which is why there's very little power to do anything new on guns, for instance, in the city of Charlottesville. So I'm very interested. This is my vision of what I talked about at the beginning about modeling governance. I want to have debates with Robert's Rules of Order about what we can do, about actions that we can do to benefit the city. And so, for instance, with the police, you know, I mean, it's very important. And then mental health, making sure that our mental health system is run properly so that if there are dangerous people who shouldn't be getting guns, that they're, that's within some of our authority because we have Region 10. I want to be focused on what we can do and not be spending our time. I mean, there's so much to do, and we have a limited amount of time each week, and I want to be spending our time talking about our actions that we can do.
Speaking of limited amount of time, we've only got a couple of minutes left in this show. Are there topics we haven't brought up or that you want to go back and discuss? I know you mentioned, when you talked about quality of life, you mentioned working with neighborhoods and the natural environment.
Well, we are hopefully, another one of the things that I have started already, this was even before becoming mayor, I think we stand on the cusp of a new era of cooperation and respect and regional approaches with the county. I'm very interested in cooperating with the county and in working with them on the issues that spill across both of our borders. Around the country, you've seen, this is called regionalism, around the country you've seen very effective, exciting advances in solving problems when adjoining localities work on something together that goes across their borders. So as an example of that, I mean, look at how many issues we share with the county. There are transportation, problems and solutions that we could do together. There's vocational education that goes across both county and city. There's the environment, the natural environment, the Ravanna River we both share. So we are talking now, us, the members of the city council and the board, members of the board of supervisors, and we have a summit that's scheduled. It's another one in February about basically formally committing through that. There could be memorandums of understanding, it could be other agreements, to working together and to collaborating, and our staff's collaborating on some of those areas I just talked about. The Ravanna River should be an ecotourist destination. That's mm-hmm. something I talked about. One of the ideas people brought up is a canoe livery is what it's called. They've done this at some other places around the country where you could more actively use it for recreation. I love the Ravanna River. We go there all the time. But we can't do that really on our own. That's something we would do with the county and with the nonprofits who are involved in the river. Things like that, I'm really hopeful that we can work with the county. And this is going to be a long thing. This could be a 25, 50-year project is evolving regionalism here. But I'm really excited based on the conversations we've already had about getting that started now.
Well, I hope our listeners are excited as well. Mike, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I know the paint hasn't even dried on your office door yet. And I'd like to have you back in a year. Talk about your first year as mayor and what you've done and what you've found and what more you'd like to do. You've been listening to Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.